Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Care of itself. But I think this part of the season is going to be matchup dependent. And last night, you got two matchups with teams who had things to prove, not only to each other, but to the teams they were playing.
I think will have something to prove in this setting. And you're right, when it comes to seeding, for example, the Lakers now, they could coast. I don't know that they will, but they could. But especially your first game in the bubble, the Bucks and the Celtics, nobody wants to get out there and half-ass it because you're setting a tone for yourself and for your team going forward. You're hoping to win a championship. I know I'm kind of making a little bit of a fuzzy point, but do you see what I'm saying, Matt? I mean, you want to go out there and set a tone for your team going forward.
And not only that, but I think even if you just look at it the way Ray is, where, you know, there are going to be some games that really don't matter and stink, that's going to be the exception because most of the teams in here are really competitive and have something to play for either in seeding or in preparing for a title run. So the Orlando-Brooklyn matchups here are going to be few and far between. And yes, Washington and Brooklyn are just disasters roster-wise, and every game they're in is probably going to be less than spectacular. But, look, I mean, the Suns are competing right now. You know,
Here come the Suns.
Yeah, right. I immediately regretted bringing up the Suns. Memphis and Portland are in a back-and-forth battle right now, and believe you me, Damian Lillard is pulling no punches. Ja Morant is pulling no punches. So, I think the vast majority of the games, even of these first eight per team, are going to be pretty competitive.
Get away from the soundboard. Don't do that again.
Ray, let me have one day for the first day in 4 months. Let me have this one day, okay? Just this one day.
No, you don't get any days.
Not even my birthday?
I see. Is it your birthday?
How about this?
It was a couple weeks ago. So late birthday present. Late birthday present.
I think you got to allow it because it recently was his birthday. Try this on. I heard today Mark DeRosa was on. Yeah, go ahead, Kolsky. I'll talk over. That's beautiful.
No, it was just background music. Go ahead.
Mark DeRosa was on MLB this morning. What do they call that? MLB Central, whatever.
And
it was it was interesting because they had breaking news and, you know, it was not good news about the Cardinals. And they were actually kind of admitting like, oh, we don't usually have to do this because usually they do highlights and it's like, yeah, two Cardinals are tested positive. So anyway, DeRosa says, you know, it's not easy what we're asking players to do right now. And I know people say, hey, I got to go to work. They got to go to work. I know. But he says, look, you gear up as a player. He says, some guys can roll out of bed and hit. Most of us can't. So you gear up to face 95. You're working up to that point. You get up to the point where, all right, I can stand in there and I got my timing to face 95 miles an hour. And then you get a call. Yeah, we're shutting down for a few days. Okay. And then you're sitting around and you don't know when you're going to go back out there. He says, that's really tough. I'm not saying players deserve our sympathy. I'm saying NBA players, I think right now, they have much more confidence in the setting, in the bubble. I don't know what's going to happen, but you can see the players they're playing basketball. They don't have that in the back of their mind that, wow, somebody's going to get shut down, and who knows, we're all going to get shut down. I think the setting and the way the NBA went about it makes a huge difference because, to me, players are just, they're playing basketball.
I want to see more games before I make any determinations, but the two games last night were undeniably entertaining because all four teams had something they needed to accomplish. New Orleans has to close the gap between themselves and Memphis.
Good luck.
And so that matters right away. Utah needs to establish that they're for real, because they went into this as one of the most problematic teams. To me, like I said, they're, you know, I would like to, when I watch Memphis and Portland play on replay, I want to see how well that game is actually being played, and I want to see how well they do this in general, because there are going to be games that aren't that interesting. But I thought Lakers-Clippers sells itself. I think anything with New Orleans is going to sell itself, because I think there are a lot of teams in the West who would like to keep New Orleans out and Memphis in.
Okay. Ray, I thought of something.
I thought
Matt had something there. I apologize. That was my bad. Oh. Ray, I thought of something last night watching the game. You're a basketball official, right, Ray?
Yes.
Okay, I want to see if you've ever heard this. You know, the toughest call, we all believe, you may know better, toughest call in basketball is charge or block. There was a play last night where Kawhi Leonard went into the paint, I think, and he ran into Anthony Davis, and they called a charge, and the Lakers wanted it reviewed, and the call stood. And I knew from seeing it that the call should have stood because of something an NBA referee once told me. And I'm wondering if you've heard this. It is shoulder to the chest, defense at its best. So that is when you're watching a game, and there's other factors, like if the guy's feet are in the, you know, inside the circle. But if you see an offensive player with his shoulder into the chest of a defensive player, there's a good chance that is an offensive foul. Shoulder to the chest, defense to its at its best. Have you heard that one, Ray?
I haven't heard it put that way, but that's sort of the standard. It's basically, if you're not extending your arm to hit a stationary to hit a defender, or the defender's arms are out, he doesn't have a legal position. So it becomes a matter of where you contact him and with what. But for the most part, if you hit a guy in the chest, there's a pretty good likelihood that he's stationary. And if he's stationary, that should be called a charge.
Makes sense to me.
There you go. Little thing to consider when you're watching these NBA games. Great games last night. Two great games. Looks like we got at least one good game going today. Huzzah to the NBA. I also think it just looks better. Ray mentioned, and I respect this, he says he doesn't care about the visuals, and those virtual fans are a little creepy, but it just looks better, the setting, than an empty stadium does. And there's nothing baseball can do about that. I understand that. That's just the way it is. But you're playing these late games, you know, in these cavernous stadiums, and there's nobody there, and a fog's coming in, as opposed to what the NBA has. That's another reason why I think there's just more energy in the building, and it comes through the TV screen, in my opinion.
I totally agree with you.
Answer me. Yeah, talk to Matt here.
I totally agree because there's something more natural about it. Someone said to me, it reminds me of places like Brooklyn and Staples during Lakers games where they sort of Hollywood black out the crowd, right? And there's sort of a spotlight on the court. And yeah, I mean, that's sort of the point is, everything off the court is peripheral enough to the NBA TV experience that teams do that. Teams darken it, so you're not even really looking at it during normal circumstances. So having, you know, just sort of a few people sitting and some screens on the side, it doesn't change the experience that much. In baseball, anytime someone hits the ball in the air, we're used to seeing thousands of people. So every single time the ball's hitting the air, we're going, whoa. Between pitches, how much of a crook and kite broadcast on NBC Sports Bay Area was spent between pitches talking about fans, looking at the crowd? A ton, right? I mean, that stuff is a huge part of the baseball TV experience, and it's gone.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I would say in rebuttal is that the Giants have, even on a terrible crowd night, they have most of the lower bowl filled, or at least enough fans so that it doesn't look sparse. But watch a game in Tampa, watch a game in Miami, watch a game in Kansas City. You'll get all the empty seats you can eat. And it's really about A, the fact that the Giants can put more people in the seats, and B, the fact that Jim Lynch, the veteran director, has got all those sight lines already figured out so that he's not going to show you empty seats. And I think, you know, that's part of why I don't trust optics, because there have been games where I've been at the ballpark and it looks pretty sparse, but a really good director can hide that. You know, the people who do the A's broadcasts are just as good, but they have less to work with. So you you get a lot more shots where there's nothing behind it.
Yeah. Even at Tampa and Oakland, certainly I watch A's games, and even there, like, you still see people. There, you might also see empty seats, but you don't see exclusively empty seats.
Coming up, it'll be brought to you by Outdoor Supply Hardware. The curious details of Antonio Brown's suspension, and Manfred says we may soon be done here. That's next. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, Whitey in for Damon, 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Whitey in for Damon today. Damon's back on Monday. Earlier, Nash was singing in honor of his sons. Here come the sons. They are cleaning up on the Wizards. Yeah, perhaps he should have been singing a different Beatles song, A Day in the Life. As in, I read the
woke
news
up,
today.
Got out of bed.
Oh, boy.
Dragged the arm across my head.
Not that part. The part about reading the news today, oh boy. Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred telling the Players Association and their executive director, Tony Clark, today that if the sport doesn't do a better job of managing the coronavirus, it could shut down for the season. We all knew baseball could shut down for the season, but this is the commissioner telling the union we need to get something done. Ray disagrees with me. I think he sees it differently, and obviously he has a lot more experience parsing these things than I do because he's written a lot more of these things than I do. To me, it sounds a little bit like the commissioner and the owners trying to get out in front of this so that if this does fall apart, they can blame the players. There has been some talk here in this story of concern about off-the-field choices, with one high-ranking official saying there are some bad decisions being made. Ray, regardless of whether you're right or I'm right, how significant do you think this is, this story?
I think it's pretty significant because it is the first time baseball has acknowledged that they've gotten this badly wrong. And if they didn't want to do the season, they wouldn't have had to go through this much rigmarole and endanger this many people to do it. I mean, I think they're stupid, but I don't think they're evil. Evil people say, we're going to start the season, we're going to get people infected, and then we're going to go, we can't do this anymore. I mean, that's a level of monstrousness I don't know that I can get to with this. With these owners. I mean, because among other things, they're jeopardizing like their own investments. I mean, they would be better off just saying 6 weeks ago, we don't think we can do this at all. We're not going to. And then that's the end of it. So I think what this really is Rob Manfred doing what he has to do to keep the union informed on the fact that it looks like baseball can't do this. It looks like they failed. And there's no way to restart this because there's no way to find a bubble and construct one quickly. I mean, people have had sort of, well, you could have five different bubbles. No, it doesn't work that way. If they shut this down, it's not going to be temporary. It's going to be, we're done. We come back next year. And that's as big a black eye as if they, as if they'd done anything else. I think it would have been much easier for them if they didn't want to play any games to not play any games. And it would have been cheaper. So I think this is basically Rob Manfred saying, we might have screwed this up far worse than we thought we could.
Except what it sounds more to me like is Rob Manfred saying, boy, you guys really screwed this up. And I think that's sort of one of the things Whitey's reacting to. I would also add that while I agree with you, Ray, that none of the owners went into this saying, let's get some people sick so we have to shut it down in 10 days. I do think they went into it with the cavalier attitude of people who were not particularly determined to see it succeed. And that doesn't mean they deliberately wanted to get guys sick, but they clearly did not take the necessary steps, steps we all could see were necessary, to ensure guys didn't get sick, which would thereby make it more likely that you got through the season. So they may not have been evil, but they certainly didn't behave like people who very much wanted to get through a whole season. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I think it says a lot about where we are that we have to distinguish here and point out that the owners aren't monsters, you know. I mean, I think it's a right. valid point, but it's just interesting that we do have to make that distinction.
But whether, you know, however this develops, whether they have to end the season or more players get sick and they keep plowing through, I'm not hearing any more of that, oh, the players have been irresponsible. This is all landed on the owners. I mean, I've yet to hear anybody say this screw up is all about, you know, the players not being responsible. I haven't heard.
Well, they basically said it to ESPN. I mean, that's the whole thing we're talking about, I think. That's the quotes that are in Jeff Passan's article, which I'm trying to pull up.
I have it right here, Matt.
A high-ranking official.
There are some bad decisions being made. Pardon me.
And that is referring to off the field choices, which is specifically the players. That's not talking about we as a sport have made bad decisions. That's a high ranking official in baseball outright saying we think the players are being irresponsible. And that's certainly finger pointing in my book.
I think that can be taken two ways, and I hate to even give the owners even the slightest benefit of the doubt, because I think their stupidity and greed is why we're in the situation we're in. But I don't think they can sell the players have been irresponsible and then not back it up with, well, this player did this and that player did that. It's the kind of sort of vague dishonesty that I think most people have come to see through, not just with the way baseball's operated, but the way the country's operated. I think this is a bad time to try to pass off, blame without evidence. I mean, it's one of the few times in American history where it's been bad.
And yet, isn't that what they're doing here?
I
don't know if they are or not. I think the bad decisions can be read pretty easily as, yeah, playing in 30 different stadiums was a bad decision.
Hold on. Let me read the sentence before it, because this is the context. It says, further, there is concern about off-the-field choices, with one high-ranking official saying there are some bad decisions being made. It seems clear to me that official is talking about what players are doing in their own time.
That's the way I read it, too. But the larger question is, how close are we? The fact that this statement comes out now, how close are we now to them actually closing it down? What is the significance of this statement, in that respect?
I don't think this is anything that doesn't have to be backed up with events, and we've already start to see events happening. The Cardinals are now postponing games because of the virus. I think this Texas San Francisco thing needs to be watched, because it also involves Arizona, and now you've got issues. You've got issues in all three divisions. And if you've got it on the West Coast, the middle of the country, and the East Coast, there ain't no other place to go. Yep. And if nobody can be kept safe, I could see where, you know, the overwhelming feeling of the players is we're not going anywhere. We're done. And basically force baseball's hand the way the Nationals forced baseball's hand on refusing to go to Miami this weekend.
And just to go back to the source material here, this also is from the Jeff Passan article. Should another outbreak materialize, Manfred, who has the power to shut down the season, could move in that direction. Multiple players briefed on the call fear the season could be shut down as soon as Monday if positive tests jump or if players continue not to strictly abide by the league's protocols. And not, I don't understand what the second part of that means. Like, who's judging that? How would that lead to a shutdown? Which, again, just suggests to me that there is no plan in place for any of this. And that is why it kind of galls me that there's a high-ranking baseball official talking about player decision-making, when the organization of MLB failed to make any plans.
No, I mean, I concur. I mean, I think this is one of those things where even if that's what's going on, and I can see where that reading could be taken, I don't think baseball can sell that. I mean, they can cancel a season, sure, but I think what the result is going to be is that there's going to be even more backlash against the people who run the sport. And the people who run the sport are not the union. They are not the players. They're the owners. And again, I think what they did was they tried to start this under conditions where they were dangerous, but the owners were willing to let the players, you know, accept that danger. Now they're finding out that there's more danger out there than they thought there was. And some players are saying no. I mean, if I were the Giants right now, I would say we're not playing tonight. I want to see what those test results are from the Rangers.
Totally.
Because if you can't guarantee that I'm safe in my own place where none of our guys have tested positive, then what are we doing?
Yeah, I don't know, Matt. I think baseball had a plan. It just wasn't a great one. Hold your breath, grab your behind, and hope that it all works out. So far, not so good.
That's what all the plans have been.
Yeah. Well, the NBA has a plan anyway. Meanwhile, Antonio Brown can now start to plan for an NBA return. Teams can start to plan for a
NBA
potential
return.
Did I say that? I apologize.
That would be impressive, man.
I'm watching the Grizzlies and the Blazers here. I apologize. My mistake. Antonio Brown getting an 8-game suspension now from the NFL. Thank you, man.
There it
not
is.
From the NBA. Yeah. He's already served that unofficial 14-game suspension, but the NFL conducting multiple investigations and could have landed him on the league's paid leave list. Here's the deal. Antonio Brown gets his 8-game suspension, and NFL media reports the 8-game suspension begins to run in week one, regardless of whether Brown is on a team. Interesting. So a suspension starts week one, even if he hasn't signed yet. The NFL has confirmed to Pro Football Talk that indeed the suspension will last through week 8, if not signed, or his team's 8th game, if signed. So he starts serving his suspension week one, even if he hasn't signed yet. I find that curious.
Isn't that not how they've done it in the past? Like, in the past, haven't you had to be signed to start serving your suspension? I feel like I'm a little
confused by that, too. Because normally what they'll do is, oh, you've signed a contract. Okay, now you sit your 8 games.
Right.
I want to look and see. I just want to read it myself because
I feel like Alden Smith ran into that years ago, and that's what's sticking in my brain for some reason, that it didn't count as suspension until he was signed by a team.
Yeah, well, I understand it's confusing. Let me just read you this again. This is Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. The reports initially conflicted on whether the 8-game suspension can be served without Brown being signed. Some say the clock doesn't start until he's on a team. And to your point, Matt, the NFL's usual approach is to give the guy credit for each week of a suspension, even if he remains unsigned. NFL media reports the 8-game suspension begins to run in week one, regardless of whether Brown is on a team. The NFL confirmed that to Pro Football Talk. So I'm just going by what Mike Florio
and Pro Football Talk
are reporting. It's a fair question, though, because that's a real head scratcher.
It's confusing. I'm not doubting the veracity of your research there, Whitey. And that's certainly a benefit to Antonio Brown in terms of trying to get signed, right? I mean, that you don't have to sign him and then have him serve the suspension. You could make a plan to sign him after week 8 or something if that's what you wanted to do. I've heard Seattle mentioned. Boy, if I was them, I don't know that I'd want to tinker with this. But on the other hand, we know what the NFL's all about, and someone's going to give him a try.
And we know that Seattle's in decline, right? I think we pretty much established that as absolute football fact. There's also this, all kidding aside, via NFL media, the punishment for Brown, 8-game suspension, does not include an allegation of sexual assault and rape made against Brown in a civil lawsuit filed last September. Apparently, the league is going to wait resolution of that lawsuit before making a decision as to whether further punishment is required, but also will not place Brown on the commissioner exempt list.
Okay, well,
I don't know why. It feels like he's getting a nice boost here, and I don't totally understand why.
I agree with you, Ray.
And it feels to me like he's getting a break now on the theory that nobody's proven that he's, you know, that he's committed the act that he's accused of. But if he is, the NFL can double back and do something else to him.
Well, right. But I mean, that is far from the, I mean, does it say in that article, Whitey, the specifics of what the 8 games are for? Because he's done a lot of bad stuff, for lack of better terms, over the last couple of years.
The 8-game suspension per NFL media covers 2 of 3 pending items against Brown, an accusation that he harassed via text message a woman who went public with concerns about Brown's behavior to SI.com, and an arrest followed by a no-contest plea on felony and misdemeanor charges from earlier this year after an altercation with the driver of a moving truck. So an 8-game suspension for those two things, as far as the allegation of sexual assault and rape made in a civil lawsuit. The NFL has not yet handed down any punishment in relation to that. So an 8-game suspension with potentially more to come. It does sound like the NFL is not exactly sure how to handle this mess.
I think they're trying to make an interesting case for this suspension is for prior bad acts, not including this one, which has yet to be proven. And I think that's the way they can get around a grievance or a potential lawsuit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the correct legal analysis here, so to speak. I don't know what to do with a guy like this, because it seems pretty clear to me that he's got significant issues that he is not handling well, that probably he should deal with before he takes another snap. And yet, again, we know the NFL, that if anyone thinks he can play, he's going to be given an opportunity. And I don't necessarily think he should never have a chance to earn a living again. So I just thought one thing that seems clear is Antonio Brown's behavior towards women has been unacceptable for a while and on a number of occasions.
Yeah. One more here. And I apologize. I'm basically reading this piece here, but it's well written and there are a lot of legal issues. So I want to make sure I get it straight. An unusual decision for the NFL to make, given that the league has conducted an investigation regarding the claims made in the civil lawsuit. The league could and perhaps should make a decision as to whether Brown is or isn't guilty of the civil charges and then act. The civil suit could still stretch on for months, if not years, keeping the allegations of sexual assault and rape attached to Brown indefinitely. We know that the NFL historically does not always wait for the courts to hand down their decisions before they hand down theirs. But in this case, apparently they are. Curious.
Well, that's why I think the suspension is for stuff that doesn't include this, and that they plan to do. I wouldn't be surprised if they plan to double back on more as time goes on. Just because, and again, I'm not a lawyer, so I could be wrong here, but it seems to me that the NFL is on very shaky ground when it tries to suspend people for behavior that hasn't been proven in a court of law or hasn't resulted in a clear showing of guilt in their investigation. And since there's been since there hasn't been the one thing the NFL always responds to, which is visual evidence, I think they're trying to play both ends against the middle.
Yeah, none of that. I think that's all right. None of it is a reasonable excuse for handling it this way. I don't know. I'm not sure what. It's hard to know without knowing anything about the allegations exactly what the right way to handle it is. But, you know, certainly Ray's right. They've left the door open to come back with more punishment if this civil case gets worked out. But as the article makes the point that you just read, Whitey, the odds are the civil case, it'll get worked out sometime after Antonio Brown ages out of football playing age. So I don't know what you're saying. If you did an investigation, then make a ruling. Otherwise, yeah, it seems to me you're just passing the buck.
On the surface, it looks like it opens the door to somebody who's interested signing Antonio Brown this year. But I don't think it does, because there's still too much uncertainty. And besides, I wish him the best. I don't judge him. I don't know, but I think you made the point, Matt. You look at his erratic behavior, how it appears to have gotten more erratic, and maybe we just weren't aware of it earlier. He shouldn't be playing football. It appears that he needs a lot of help. And to me, I know a lot of people still say, hey, 49ers, they should be looking at Antonio Brown. I don't think the 49ers have any interest. They made that clear when they did some check-in on his background, and a coach somewhere said, yeah, he told me one game he was not going to block that game. It was one of his Steelers coaches. Yeah, Antonio Brown said he's not going to block that game. 49ers want no interest in that. You can't depend on him. So there's no way, you know, teams that are desperate may look to him, but teams that are desperate mean that they would depend on him, and you cannot depend on Antonio Brown to show up when you need him to as a football player. I see no reason why someone would take that chance on him right now.
Somebody will, because somebody always does, but in terms of the 49ers, all you need to know is that they didn't look very hard into this when he was available. And I think that's sort of, that's the tell. When he was available last summer, the 49ers didn't bite on it. And they sort of said, yeah, we're satisfied with what we have. And I think they made their intentions clear. So I don't think all of a sudden anything that's happened in the last year makes him more appealing to them.
That's right. And not only that, but they lied when they said they were happy with what they had. They just didn't want Antonio Brown. And that was 4 or 5 incidents ago, right? Because we know a month later they were trading for Emmanuel Sanders. But they had no interest in Antonio Brown when his stock was higher than it is now and when he wasn't about to be suspended. I can't see why they would possibly have interest now.
Matt, what do you think of stories suggests that the 49ers have been looking into the possibility of signing free agent defensive lineman Jadeveon Clowney?
I love it.
Yeah, I do too.
I think especially after the Jamal Adams move from Seattle, if the Jamal Adams move is intended to say, you know what, we were a little short talent on defense last year, we're going to upgrade, the ideal Niners move would be to say, no, you're not, and take away their best pass rusher. I love that.
All right. Yeah, coming up. Yeah, go ahead, Ray.
I was going to say, Clowney comes at a price that gets in the way of what they're trying to do with Kittle, so I don't think they can afford him.
Except if he's not signed now, maybe he'd sign a 1-year deal, and maybe you kick Kittle's big money down the road a little bit. Who knows?
Jadeveon Clowney, a good fit for the 49ers. That's coming up. And also, we will talk more about Phi Beta Kappler. I'm sorry, Ray. Gabe Gaffler. That's next. Damon Radokolsky, Whitey in for Damon. 95.7 The Game, and that'll be brought to you by Fremont Bank, full-service banking.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
On stations like this, this is an opinion, this is fact. The NBA bubble restart is the greatest thing ever. We have Portland and Memphis. Yes, thank you, Matt. 124 all, we're going to overtime in a crucial
free basketball
bubble game. Yeah, this is great, Ray.
It's okay. I mean, I haven't seen the game, so I don't know if it's good or not, but it's interesting.
Did Nash just say to you what he said it to me, Whitey?
I don't know. What was that?
Who's on second base?
Yeah. In fairness, it was Luke's joke. I just didn't let him go on the mic.
I appreciate you for everything you've done, Nash.
Nash, can we give Ray credit for that and say that was a Ray joke, that Ray was the one?
I was going to give Ray credit for focusing just on the show during his live radio show while you two are talking about the basketball game on TV. So, Ray, thank you for coming to work today and doing your job.
Wow. Wow, shots fired.
Because you signed my check, that really means a lot to me.
You're welcome.
Can't even give him a compliment, I tell you.
No one takes a compliment like Ray Ratto.
I hate compliments. I'm just here to get to 554.
It really wasn't a compliment. Right. It was more a fact. I know you can respect facts, Ray.
Facts. That's what we're all about here. Yeah. So we're going to overtime. Fact. The Grizz and the Blazers going to overtime. Crucial game, and we had two absolutely, well, highly entertaining contest last night as the NBA got going again. Giants game was also entertaining last night, right? I mean, it looked like another slog when the Padres.
It's the Warriors remix.
Is it?
Not sure why we had that there, but you know, basketball.
I know why we had that there, because the two children back in the studio just hit buttons whenever they want.
No, I think the point there was, boy, wouldn't it be great if the Warriors were in the bubble, and I think Nash and Lucas are right. But next year, guys, next year, thank you for contributing there. The Giants game was entertaining last night. Another comeback. They were 6-1 down. They came back to tie it in the eighth. So, yeah, we went extra innings. And then in the 10th, San Diego scored, I don't know, 16, 17 runs in the top of the 10th.
Right.
The Padres. Yeah, I mean, they just kept on going there. The Giants scored a run in the 10th, and that was the ballgame. But, of course, the big story was what Gabe Kapler did in the 10th inning when he went to take Tyler Rogers out of the game, even though the pitching coach, Andrew Bailey, had just been out there, and you can't do that. So what's really embarrassing, as you probably saw, he took Rogers out. Then the umpire said, you can't do that because the pitching coach was just there. So you can't take him out. He's got to throw one more pitch. So Rogers had to go back out, threw one pitch, and then you had Austin Hedges lay down a suicide squeeze, and they got another run. Tyler Rogers is the hero here because, you think of all the things he could say justifiably about how upset he was, and he says, that's a mistake, whatever. If I did my job better, he wouldn't have had to take me out. But Gabe Kapler, there's no letting Gabe Kapler off the hook last night for the latest gaffe.
Yeah, there's no dancing around this. And he's going to have to put up with it probably for a while, because it attached his screw up in Philadelphia attached to him for the entire length of his stay there. And the only thing that gets you off the hook is ultimately if you start winning 6 out of every 10 games rather than 5 out of every 10. And he didn't do that in Philadelphia, and it dogged him until the day they fired him.
Yeah, and it's going to be a long time before this team's capable of winning 6 out of 10 games on a regular basis. So I don't know how good Gabe Kapler's prospects are for getting out of the hole that he has dug for himself at this point. As crazy as that sounds, 7 games into a 60-game season of his first year managing, it's just... And I guess that hole might not mean anything to him, because it's really just a hole of fan opinion. But he's got a long uphill battle just to gain the basic respect of Giants fans at this point.
Yeah, well, maybe this isn't entirely fair, but this is also a fact. Since we're dealing with facts here, it's a factual Friday. We know that Gabe Kapler had a terrible reputation as a manager in Philly, right? Because he got off to a dreadful start. He brought in a pitcher, Hobie Milner, who was not warmed up. And the umpires took pity on him and said, well, let him warm up, but you can't bring a guy in when he's not warmed up. So he did that. So he brought the terrible reputation in here. And then, of course, the story came out that he and Farhan may have hid some sexual abuse allegations that went on in the Dodger organization. They may have concealed some of that, may not have dealt with that the way they should have, and they admitted that. So then you have Gabe Kapler's introductory press conference, which was the worst ever, right, Ray? I mean, I think being objective about it, that had to be the worst managerial/coach introductory press conference in the history of pro sports. We had that, and then you have him get the season going, and they get off to a bad start. Well, they're playing a little better, and then that gaffe last night. At what point do the Giants have to listen to their fans or decide on their own, okay, this just isn't the guy?
They don't have to do that anytime soon in a very practical way, and that is that the outrage over Kapler has not reached a crescendo where it becomes troublesome to the people who make the decisions above Farhan, which would be Greg Johnson and his father, Charlie. This is not a Larry Bear decision anymore. This is about the Johnson family. And Greg Johnson seems like the side of guy who doesn't want to be bothered with that stuff. They've put him on the business side. And so unless when normalcy returns next year and they can start getting people into the stands and figuring out what their popularity is again, I think nobody can do this but Farhan, and I don't think Farhan is in a mood to do anything right now, but I'll bet he's grinding his teeth down to a pretty fine powder right today.
Yeah, I agree that he's probably not going to do anything. Well, he's certainly not going to do anything now, probably not going to do anything this year in terms of Kapler's job. I don't know. Again, it's just it's an awfully big hole to dig yourself out of. And if we don't really know that a manager is good until he has a good team to manage, you're talking about this guy being here for at least a couple more years before we even know if he's a good manager. And how many more, even if it's not, even if this sort of stupid mistake didn't reflect on his actual ability as a manager overall, I think it does. But even if it didn't, if this was just a total brain fart, it's still just, where's the light at the end of the tunnel? I don't know.
That's a great point.
You're a long way from it.
And yeah. That's where I mean, it could be two separate things. Just because he doesn't know the rules doesn't mean that he can't do other things well that a manager needs to do, even though we've seen no evidence of it. And I know that I'm far from the first person to make this point, but Giants fans coming off of Boach, who was a master, he knew the rules and he caught Don Mattingly in an improper mound visit. Years before that, Grady Little, he was a master at handling his bullpen, and Kapler is the opposite of that. So he was just a very interesting choice to begin with, in my opinion. I don't know why they brought in Gabe Kapler to begin with, unless Farhan believes that, you know what, this guy can help young players feel comfortable, and he's going to do what I tell him to do, and he's on board with what I want to do. That's the only reason why, and he must really feel strongly that way to have stuck with him through all of this.
Well, he stuck with him through a sort of a sexual abuse case in Dodger Stadium, and even took on some of the weight when he didn't have to. So clearly he is extremely fond of and respects Gabe Kapler a great deal. So that's the answer right there. Here's where it's going to get dicey. It could get dicey, though. If you start to see young players, young players that they value, basically going, this isn't working out, and you start to hear grumbling like that, then Farhan's got a whole set of fires, different fires to put out. I mean, for instance, as a hypothetical, and I'm not saying there is any evidence of this at all, if Donovan Solano came out tomorrow and said, man, I don't think Gabe Kapler's the answer here, Donovan Solano would be gone because there's no long-term plan that includes Donovan Solano. And I think, that's when you would start to see Farhan sit up and go, what did I do here? And short of that, unless he continues to screw things up that no manager is allowed to screw up, and that's not, tactical decisions. That's rule stuff. That's turning in the wrong lineup card. That's, breaking protocol. I mean, that's when Farhan would have to step in and go, Gabe, I don't think this is happening. Let's take you upstairs and find somebody else to do this. But short of that, I think Farhan's going to stay with what he has because he's already shown how much, not just loyalty, but intent he has on giving Kapler the job and keeping him there, and not for the short term either.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I might differ on is I'm not sure he took on any responsibility he didn't need to for the sexual assault controversy, because the issue there was, Gabe Kapler reported this up the chain within the organization, which included Farhan, but did not report it to the police, and no one else did either. So I think Farhan took on the weight he had to take on, and that may be in part why he kept Kapler and didn't, do anything with that job when that scandal got revisited this year, is because he had some egg on his face there as well.
By the way, coming up top of the hour, excuse me, Ray, I just want to mention that CJ Nitkowski, Rangers broadcaster, 10-year Major League veteran, he is going to be joining us at the top of the hour here in just a couple of minutes, going to talk to CJ Nitkowski. He's a broadcaster, as I say, with the Rangers, who are visiting the Giants tonight. What were we going to say, Ray?
No, I was going to say that Farhan could have sort of ducked his responsibility in that press conference, but he volunteered his name, at a time when I don't know that anybody in that room was going to ask about his culpability. I think this was Kapler's weight to carry, but Farhan went out of his way to include himself in that decision-making, which I don't think had ever been made thoroughly clear before then, because I think people mostly thought that Kapler had basically, you know, not told Andrew Friedman, or did tell Andrew Friedman, and he, being the guy who runs the Dodgers, decided not to do anything about it. I think Zaidi could have skated and chose not to, which, frankly, I admired him for at the time, because I think he would have gotten away with not being blamed for it. But now that's part of him, too.
With that, we welcome you to your 4 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Thanks for being with us on this Friday. Damon Radokolsky on 95.7 The Game. Whitey in for Damon. And nice enough to join us here with the Rangers visiting the Giants tonight. A Rangers analyst, also does work for Fox and SiriusXM, spent 10 years in the majors as a pitcher. CJ Nitkowski with us. CJ, thank you. This may be personal, you know, baseball dealing with COVID concerns here. We understand that someone, one of your partners, may have tested positive. Just want to make sure you and everybody with the Rangers, as far as you do, are doing okay these days.
Yeah, everyone's doing well. I mean, as far as on the TV side, we haven't had any issues, haven't had any positives. And like everybody else, just kind of navigating this crazy time.
CJ, how difficult is it for players to focus on the task at hand with so many COVID issues and questions swirling around them every day now?
Yeah, I think athletes in general, and I think baseball players certainly fall into this category, they're pretty good at compartmentalizing, even though this is something they've never dealt with before. And we just don't have the time. Like, we don't get the face-to-face time with the players right now. And you know, through Zoom meetings and stuff, you can have conversations and try to get a feel for, you know, how guys are doing and what they're doing and how they're handling it. I think, you know, like anything, once you get in between the lines, you just kind of go out and compete. There are certain things that you have to do, and there's protocols that you have to follow. But then you've also seen, right, where some guys, you slip back into competition mode and you kind of forget a little bit. You know, a la Joe Kelly in the Houston Astros, and even though you're not supposed to, you know, leave your spot on the bench, you're not supposed to get aggressive, sometimes it's hard to forget those things when you're in the middle of competing. So I think for the most part, listen, you can't say it's the same story for every single player, but you've heard how many players want to continue with the season, how many want to be out there playing, how many are showing some frustration as far as the things that we're hearing about what happened with the Marlins. They want to be out there, and I think that's kind of the overriding theme.
Given Major League Baseball's belated response to the virus in the last few days, has the news about Matt Hicks forced the club to test its players any more or make an effort to try to test them today now that the news is out?
No, there's zero contact between the media and the players, so that wouldn't have anything to do with anything. Just, you know, they have everything broken up into three different tiers, and the media are tier three. And so, I mean, there is literally zero interaction. You don't get anywhere near a player on the field, none of it. So the idea that
we really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.